National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The leaders of bishops' conferences from around the world are gathered in Rome to discuss their approach to church reform. The Vatican Summit on the Protection of Minors in the Church is dedicated to responsibility, accountability, and transparency. But organizers have downplayed expectations. Reporting on this historic event from the Eternal City is the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. My co-host and the Register's senior editor, Matthew Bunsen, is in Rome for this event. In the days before February 21st through the 24th meeting, members of the preparatory committee clarified that the focus of the discussion would be on the sexual abuse of minors, not the abuse of vulnerable adults or seminarians, nor on the role of homosexuality in the cover-ups that have surrounded the current affairs. Nonetheless, headlines from this week have highlighted active homosexuality within the church, as well as other sexual exploitations. They all paint a picture of a church in need of healing and reform. With this terrible news, it's tempting to wonder, why be Catholic? Our second guest, Brandon Vogt, takes up that exact question in his book, Why I Am Catholic and You Should Be Too. The book is not new, but the preface of the newly released paperback is, and it's all about overcoming the apparent hopelessness of the sexual abuse crisis. But first, let's hear from Matthew and Edward in Rome.
Edward, it's always good to talk with you, especially when I visit Rome. So welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks. Good to be with you here in Rome, Matthew.
Well, I'm here, of course, covering the Sex Abuse Summit. You have been covering it extensively yourself. First, there's a lot of question as to what exactly this is.
Well, I think as many listeners will know, it came about because of the raft of abuse scandals over the summer that came in all parts of the world, and also, of course, the Theodore McCarrick scandal, which kind of kicked all this off, in a sense. And then you, of course, had the Pennsylvania report. So this is very much a reaction to that. And in many ways, I think it's a reaction to the public, the faithful actually wanting to see something done about this, and the church to really take it more seriously than perhaps they thought they had done.
Well, the title of it, when it was first released back in September, was this is supposed to be focused on the protection of minors and vulnerable adults. Mm. Somehow that last part, vulnerable adults, has fallen by the wayside, it seems.
Yes, this is a slightly peculiar thing because, as you say, the title was released with vulnerable adults involved, and now and we were promised at the synod, at the youth synod, that this issue would be discussed, particularly regarding seminarians, because seminarians were a central part of the McCarrick scandal, and people were concerned, not only there, also in Honduras and other places, where you've heard quite regularly over the years this sort of culture of homosexuality in the seminaries and an abuse that has been related to that. And of course, the McCarrick scandal was part of that. So there was a call there for it to involve vulnerable adults and seminarians and religious. And then, of course, you've had to, even more recently, the cases of alleged abuse against female religious by clergy. So and those are more in the developing world. So there's been this sort of willingness to have a more broad approach to this issue, not just to focus on minors.
And yet, here we are covering a Vatican summit that seems to be very tightly focused on minors.
Yes, their reason is because it's to try and focus primarily on that because of the shortage of time. And they say that, well, Cardinal Supich and Archbishop Scicluna, who are leading this, they were saying that the benefits of it by focusing on minors can be applied to vulnerable adults, but they're not actually going to focus on it during this meeting.
You mentioned Archbishop Charles Scicluna, who has emerged as something of a star here. We were very much aware of him prior to this as, I think it's safe to say, one of the leading experts in the church on the sex abuse crisis. He worked for many years at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. What did you take of his comments yesterday?
Well, it showed very much how he's very much on top of this, and he was certainly the right person to be leading this. I think he's leading this these four days more than anyone else, and that's because of his wealth of experience in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith and and also as a canon lawyer, a respected canonist, who knows a lot about this. And you could tell the things he was saying about having adequate safeguards and transparency and responsibility yesterday. These were all, they showed very much his expertise in this. And I think it gives people hope that, you know, that these, it's in safe hands in a sense, although he didn't, there was one criticism, I think, or one of a few where he didn't really discuss or want to discuss the issue of homosexuality in this issue. Some, of course, think it's not related to that. Some survivors and victims think it's not a part of it, but others do, and especially when it comes to vulnerable adults and abuse of seminarians and others. So he said it, you can't just categorize groups of people like that. You have to deal with them on an individual basis. You can't generalize, and he said that's never a good idea. But he didn't really want to broach the subject at all of homosexuality, which is rather strange in a sense.
We had recourse to the comment of individual cases on several points. I'm thinking specifically of the 21 reflection points that were handed out to the participants. We've both read them. And in one particular case, there was a question of the law of proportionality in judgments or punishments for priests. And Archbishop Shikluna pointed out, well, no, it has to be on a case-by-case basis.
Yes.
But to those 21 points, it seemed like best practices for the Church.
Mm. Yes, and I think people welcomed it. It was, the Pope said it would be a starting point for discussion, a point of departure for discussion for the 4 days. And I think people welcomed it. It was very thorough. It's all about processes and safeguards and really making them tighter and so that this scourge can be dealt with properly. But one aspect I think that was missing, which I think people were a little concerned about, was any sort of element of the root causes or addressing those within those points. And in fact, that's been a sort of omission so far, has been why the root causes have not been really brought to the fore in this meeting.
So well, in a way, it's sort of like trying to write out a prescription or a treatment plan, but you're not really sure what you're suffering from because you're not sure how you got it in the first place.
Exactly. In fact, this is something that Cardinal Gerhard Müller said before the meeting began, that you can't really make a good diagnosis if you don't know what the root causes are. And so in a sense, the people feel, well, it maybe got off onto a flawed start. But we'll see. I mean, Archbishop Shikluna said that the most important thing about this meeting is the follow-up and what happens afterwards. So if there seems to be a lacking in certain areas, maybe they'll make them up in the future.
Well, to that very point, the Holy Father at the very start of this summit said, I'm quoting essentially, that we have to avoid easy condemnations and we need practical results. And one of those off the cuff, he added for emphasis, we need practical solutions and practical results. Those seem to be presented by Cardinal Supich in his Relatio or intervention, laying out a plan for the accountability of bishops.
Mm, yes, yes, he did these 12 points, metropolitan points. But I think that is a. We're going to find out more about that, I think, before the end, about that sort of aspect of transparency and trying to end the cover up. And I think that is obviously a crucial part of this meeting. And people said going into it that unless that's dealt with head on, and that really takes center focus of this, it's going to be considered perhaps a waste of time. So the cover up is really the problem in a sense. Obviously, the abuse is the central problem, but then you've got the cover up, which people say is worse, is bad if not worse. Yeah.
Now, when talking about something like the metropolitan model, which is what this is being called, a lot of critics would immediately go to the fact that now former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick was himself a metropolitan at one point. Mm. So it raises a question of credibility or just sort of the practical application of this.
Yes. Well, there is that question, isn't there, Matthew, about bishops being accountable to bishops and whether that can be practically done and whether it should be done, because bishops have a special role and you can't have sort of laity holding them accountable. At least that's been the procedure in the past. Now, whether they're going to get past that and find a way to do that, or at least find a way to make them hold them accountable in a different way, that's something we're going to have to see. But certainly this is going to be a challenge, I think, going forward.
Well, you raise the question of bishops holding each other accountable. We had a lot of conversation about fraternal correction.
Yes.
A culture of disclosure. Mm. But one of the things that we have especially heard is constant recourse to synodality and collegiality. Mm. At times, they seem to be used almost interchangeably. Mm. I remember back in the October Synod of Youth, suddenly synodality was there in the document, and no one could really figure out how or why it was. Mm. But here we are at this summit talking again about that and clericalism and collegiality. Mm. How do you see all of these working together, at least the way that they're envisioning it?
Mm. Well, I think this is all part of the response, as you say, to clericalism and to try and democratize the process, if you like, so that people all have a say and it's not just a power top-down power play. So it's very much seen as that. And I think people get confused about collegiality and synodality. Of course, it's very easy to get confused because they're very similar in a sense. Of collegiality is really to do with the Pope consulting the bishops and the bishops consulting him and in the local churches and so forth in relation to the Pope, whereas synodality is more about the laity having a say, I see it, and having a stake in the process and being consulting the bishops and vice versa. And I see that as the emphasis on this. But again, it's a response to that clericalist critique.
But clericalism itself is now being held up as the root cause or problem. It strikes me as that's another, perhaps, as some critics would say, path of avoiding some of the other key issues that probably need to be discussed.
Mm. Well, this is the criticism of that it's not just clericalism, although everyone, I think, agrees that that's part of it. It's abuse of power, no doubt. But there is the, people will say, well, there is that homosexual element to it. There's also the lack of chastity. The letter that Cardinal Burke and Brandmuller put out was trying to get to the roots of this, which they say is a turning away from the gospel, a turning away from the teachings of the church, especially on sexuality. And then you get all of these sinful actions taking place and crimes, and that's related to this sort of falling away from a fall in faith, a crisis of faith, they would say.
Yes. Well, talking about sin, there's a new book out on the Vatican on the homosexual cabal or subculture, however you want to describe it, by Frederick Martel. What are you hearing about that?
Well, a lot of negative response, really. I think a lot of people feel it's a book with an agenda. The agenda is very much the LGBT one, the homosexual one. They want to make the change the church's teaching to become more accepting of their agenda, and really to normalize homosexuality and gender theory and so forth in the church. This is part of their push, and so it's been criticized for that. And I think a lot of people aren't taking it seriously. We had a good editorial in the Register, which I think put it very well, in that it's a distraction from a diabolical distraction against this meeting, because they're really, as I say, they're trying to impose this agenda on the meeting, and it's timed precisely because of that.
Yeah, that editorial was an opportunity to make a reference to Hieronymus Bosch in The Temptation of St. Anthony. So it's a rare day indeed that you get to see that in a Register editorial.
Exactly.
Very briefly, what are you working on?
Well, I'm obviously working on this meeting, and I hope to do a wrap-up of it at the end. It's interesting also talking very much to the abuse survivors and hearing their views and really putting them together. And hopefully, when you see their experience, their desires, and what the bishops are doing, there'll be some good to come from this.
The voices of survivors have definitely been heard here, haven't they?
They have, yes, and made a mark. And I think anyone who came here thinking, you know, it's not perhaps as serious as they think, I think will stand corrected.
Yeah, I would encourage everyone to read our coverage at ncregister.com, but also to listen to some of the testimonies that were heard by the bishops in the hall during the summit. It makes for very powerful listening. Well, Edward Penton, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Matthew.
When we come back, we talk to Brandon Vogt, author of Why I'm Catholic and You Should Be Too. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Don't miss a moment of 2019. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. With the Register, you'll get the real story behind the events that unfold over the course of the year. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. Want to continue your subscription after your free trial? Just pay $49.95 and you'll get a total of 26 issues filled with spiritual insights on world events, along with compelling Catholic news and information. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/NYR or call 800-421-3230 and mention code 919-NYRA. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by Brandon Vogt, who serves under Bishop Robert Barron as Content Director of Word on Fire Ministries. Brandon is author of a handful of books, but the one we're talking about today is Why I Am Catholic and You Should Be Too. It was first released in 2017, but it has been re-released recently as a paperback, and it's this new paperback book with a preface that has caught my attention. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Jeanette, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So, Brandon, this new release of the book, it's of course a paperback, it's Ave Maria Press who's released it, but this preface is very important for our time. So what is the new preface?
Well, I wrote this book about a year and a half ago, and it was aimed at helping former Catholics, atheists, agnostics give Catholicism consideration. And so it's titled Why I Am Catholic and You Should Be Too, and it makes a case for the Catholic faith. But when I wrote it, I think maybe the sexual abuse crisis got one or two paragraphs. Mm. It just wasn't a burning issue at the time. And part of that was because whenever I reviewed the surveys of why people say they've left the church, up until 2018, the abuse crisis, surprisingly, was never within the top 3, 4, 5 answers. It just wasn't a huge issue for a lot of people today. But then, of course, all that changed over this, you know, quote unquote, summer of shame with all the revelations of abuse from the top to the bottom of the Catholic hierarchy. And so as we were preparing to release this paperback edition of the book, the publisher, Ave Maria Press, came to me and said, you know, we'd really like a new preface that, you know, a year and a half later kind of sets the book in a new context. And that was when I said, well, you know, probably anyone picking this book up today in 2019, the first thing they're going to think is, why should I become Catholic in light of the sexual abuse crisis? The church just seems so dysfunctional, so full of corruption. Why would I even consider that? And so that's when jointly we decided, let's put a new preface to the book that at the very beginning, within the first 2 or 3 pages, deals with this big stumbling block a lot of people have to considering becoming Catholic.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this exact question myself, and that is the reason why when I got this email, because I'm one of the many who are receiving your newsletters, I think almost daily sometimes, that describe what's going on at Word on Fire and also at your own website. And that's where I saw about this preface. I was like, okay, this is great. This is a great topic that we need to be dealing with, because I've been thinking about the topic. I spent time poring over in the latter part of this week this book that has talked about homosexuality in the church. It's by a French author. It's terrible stuff. It's really terrible stuff. And I thought to myself, where am I to go? You know, thinking of the words of Peter and the apostles when Christ presents them with the cross, basically, right? Where am I to go? And so those words came to mind when I saw the preface of your book. What encouragement do you give to people, Brandon?
Well, I think the only encouragement is Jesus Christ, the head of the church. He's the hope that our church is rooted in. Certainly, we don't place our hope in, you know, the moral excellence of our leaders, as good as many of them are. Mm-hmm. But leaders fail us. I mean, this isn't a problem unique to Catholicism. This is just a problem of humanity. In fact, our church teaches as dogma original sin, the fact that people tend to go wrong. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. We shouldn't lose hope by it. You know, I mentioned in the preface, though, that at the same time, we shouldn't downplay the gravity of this very, very serious crisis. I think that's a mistake many Catholics make is, you know, we try to show, which is true, that the statistics in the Catholic Church are pretty consistent with abuse statistics in other religions and other spheres of social life, like sports clubs or schools. You know, we show that we've made great progress over the last 20, 30, 40 years in cleaning up most of this stuff. Most of the stuff we're talking about happened decades ago, but none of that really soothes the ache that all of us in and out of the church feel. And so what I try to make the case in this little preface is, first, recognize the gravity of the situation, but then recognize the reason why we're Catholic and the reason other people should be should consider becoming Catholic is not because of the moral excellence of its leaders, but because of Jesus Christ. We believe in Jesus, not in all of the bishops, not in the leaders of the church, you know, again, as good as many of them are. Our faith is rooted in the perfection and glory of Christ. And we become Catholic because we're convinced that what the church teaches is true, not that all of its leaders are perfect. Right. So these are some of the distinctions I try to make in the preface.
Absolutely. And I really did appreciate that. In fact, you talk about the fact that we do expect more of our priests, and that is true. We do expect more because they are the ones who lead us to Christ so often. You know, when in your book itself, you talk about three words that basically describe why you became Catholic, or they're the words that so many of us who have studied Catholic culture and philosophy know: truth, beauty, and goodness, the transcendentals. But those words hardly have meaning for people today, especially the first one, truth. So break that down, the truth, beauty, and goodness. We have a very short show, but break down in a tidbit what that means for us today, and especially for millennials who you wrote this book for, your own peers.
Yeah, I converted to Catholicism when I was in college, and these three things were among my ultimate desires. You know, I wanted not just to believe in true things, I wanted the truth. I wanted to live not just, you know, a pretty good life, but I wanted to be in tune with goodness itself. I wanted not just a few beautiful things, but I wanted to tap into beauty itself. And so those three things were converging pathways that led me to the Catholic Church, because I became convinced that what the Catholic Church teaches is objectively true, namely that God exists, that Jesus is God, that Jesus rose from the dead, proving the fact that he's God, vindicating his claims, and then that Jesus established the church, and that church is the Catholic Church. These are all objective claims. They're either true or they're not true, regardless of human opinion or feeling. And then when it comes to goodness, I recognize that the church not only has a great philosophical claim to being a source of moral goodness, because God, who is the good, started the church, but I also looked at the church's moral record up and down the centuries and saw this unwavering and unmatchable display of goodness from great saints like Mother Teresa of Calcutta and Father Damien Molokai, even just ordinary Catholics that I encountered in my life. These were the best people that I had met. They were more good than anybody else I had encountered, and I wanted to be like them. And then finally, beauty. You know, I was attracted to the church's rich patrimony of beautiful literature, beautiful art, beautiful poetry and song. Of course, the medieval Gothic cathedrals. You know, I recognized that no other institution was as committed to beauty up and down the centuries than the Catholic Church. And so these three things together were sort of converging hints that maybe the Catholic Church is right and worth considering. And that's what led me into its doors.
You know, Brandon, you're making me think of a story I heard this week. And I have to say, I've had a pretty depressing week. It's just been hard. I, you know, working in the news, live and breathe this stuff. I have to read it. I don't want to sometimes. But somebody told me a story this week of a man who converted on his deathbed. And he said, yes, I want to be Catholic. And it is someone who knows what is happening in the church and who, of course, has seen the church throughout his life and had other opportunities to come home, but who on his deathbed embraced and what, why? It's because of the peace that he saw in his children who were Catholic. And that is beautiful. And so I agree with you about that beauty and that goodness that can attract, which kind of leads me to maybe a question I'd love to answer myself, but I'll ask you, what can we do right now as believers to help others in this time?
We need to double our commitment to being saints. It's the same answer that you would give in response to any crisis at any period of the church. Saints are always the answer to crises. And so double down on your commitment to holiness, double down on your moral commitments, be a good husband, a good wife, a good father, a good mother, a good teacher, a good lawyer, a good doctor. You know, let your faith just radiate in such a way that it's attractive and blinds out all of these problems and crises in the church. That's how the church recovers from scandals like this, is when the radiance of Christ is evident through her saints. So we need to become saints.
Absolutely. And I would say cling to Christ, cling to Christ, because he's the only one that can understand how we feel in this moment. Brandon, how can people get a copy of your book?
You can find the book at any Catholic bookstore. You can find it on Ave Maria's website, anywhere where books are sold. It's titled Why I Am Catholic and You Should Be Too.
And of course, the preface is called Why I Am Catholic Despite the Sexual Abuse Crisis. And you can read at least part of that at BrandonVogt.com, BrandonVogt.com. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us. I have a feeling that you are praying deeply during this week as the bishops are meeting, and I am too. And we're praying that truth, beauty, and goodness just shines out after this meeting so that we can reclaim this church for Christ.
Amen. They need our prayers and deserve them.
Amen. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.